Ladies, gentlemen, geeks of all ages, you are now entering BJ Shay's Geek Nation. Welcome.
Yes, welcome to BJ Shay's Geek Nation. I am the Reverend Enfuego. Across from me is Vicky Barcelona.
Hello.
We've got the show's namesake, BJ Shay. Not here, somewhere else, on assignment. I don't know where. But running the boards is Joey D's.
Did he get lost again?
Oh, I think so. It's up to you to find him.
Okay, I'm on it.
Well, no, stay here. Wait till after the podcast. Okay. We're just going to not deal with him on this one. On today's show, we will talk, since it's getting a little closer to spooky time, we got the greatest 90s Halloween movies ranked. We've also got some D&D monsters that are great for Halloween games. And, of course, the Geek Sheet with Vicky B. Vicky, how can people get a hold of us?
They can get a hold of us via our website, bjgeeknation.com. It's going to have our blogs, podcasts, and more. or just search for BJ Shay's Geek Nation on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, radio.com, and iTunes to find us.
Yes, so many things. And now this is, we're going to talk about some spooky stuff, but I wanted to get people psyched up for some things. Now, this came out last week, and it was announced, but I want to just tell everyone right now, because we haven't talked about it, and I was kind of hoping BJ would be here, but I can't wait any longer, so he'll just have to listen right now, and then he can weigh in later. We have been talking a lot about maybe a live action Into the Spider-Verse.
Yes.
There have been a whole lot of casting choices that they've been making in the recent weeks, really, that even like Electro from The Amazing Spider-Man 2 is going to be in the next Spider-Man movie. Jamie Foxx reprising that role, which would be very interesting. And now it looks like we're getting a couple more that are really leaning into a live action Into the Spider-Verse.
I'm on the edge of my seat, Rev.
Both. Now, this is according to, sources. Rumor has it that Tobey Maguire and Andrew Garfield maybe are. We don't know, but it looks like they might be joining the next Spider-Man movie. So we'll have the old school Spider-Mans. So the first one, the Sam Raimi ones, was Tobey Maguire. And then Andrew Garfield took over when, I don't know who the actor was, but it was the Amazing Spider-Man ones. That the first one was all right. Second one, we've talked about how flat it fell. And then even with like the old Sam Raimi ones, the first two were phenomenal. Third one, you had dancing jazz hand Spider-Man, which I didn't really care
I saw
for.
A lot of great memes of that recently.
Yeah, right?
So good.
Fun fact, I think I read that Tobey Maguire's like grandmother taught piano or something. That's probably why he did the piano scene, because he plays.
Oh, that would make a little bit more sense. It's like, I'll do this, but I got to play piano.
I forgot that he got changed and did his finger guns down the sidewalk the whole time. I relived Cringe. That
it's
moment.
Just like the emo hair, like the over. I was just looking at that, and it's like watching it before was like, ew. And then watching it like, I don't know how many years later now it is, like 13 years or something ridiculous. You're like, ew. Like it was just, that crit. Like, you don't want to watch because you feel embarrassed for the character.
Secondhand embarrassment.
Yeah, like, there's a reason why I don't watch The Office, and I can't, because Michael Scott is, like, the worst human being
ever. He is, that's correct.
Like, I can't, like, I just can't watch it. So it'll be interesting to see what goes along with this, because it's set to be directed, the next Spider-Man movie, from Spider-Man Homecoming and Far From Home filmmaker John Watts. Now, movie insider site Fandom Wire says that the Sony sources have confirmed that Maguire, Garfield, and Holland will all appear in the untitled Spider 3-quel due out in late 2021. Well, I mean, depending on whenever we can actually get movies again, so it might be later than that.
So this is interesting, because in the last Spider-Man, he got ousted, right?
Mm-hmm. He did, at the very end of it.
Outed?
Yeah.
Ousted?
Outed. He was outed. He wasn't ousted. He's still Spider-Man. It's just everybody knows he's Spider-Man now, because, like, the best thing ever, they turned J. Jonah Jameson into a Alex Jones type, like, podcast live stream news, quote-unquote news guy. And then it was the leaked Mysterio stuff that was like, he's Spider-Man! And he's just like, So
how are they going to bring him into the Spider-Verse? Are there going to be more than one Spider-Man, so maybe they can confirm that he's not Spider-Man?
Well, and that's the thing, because it's going to the blockbuster lineup for the as of yet named third Spider-Man movie will include Benedict Cumberbatch's Doctor Strange, which will also in turn he'll be kind of the Tony Stark mentor role. Whereas, like, in the first one, it was Tony Stark. The second one had Nick Fury in the mentor role.
And, I mean, it had a little bit of Happy, too.
Yeah, exactly.
Fake Nick Fury. It was Skrull Nick
Fury. That's right. Oh, because he's up in space right now, which we'll see in the... Yeah, we'll see in the Disney Plus series. So it'll be... Yeah, I forgot it. I got to go back and watch that movie.
Fake Nick Fury is not a good mentor, by the way.
No. He's actually really bad. So it kind of helped out with having Happy. But, I mean, Happy's banging Aunt May.
Trying. So. Poor Happy.
Yeah, I think at this point, maybe I'll actually get there. I don't know. We'll have to see how about that one.
Happy.
And then also Zendaya as the role of MJ. And basically what their fandom wire is speculating is that it's going to be Strange who are going to bring all three iterations together, which what we've talked about before. WandaVision comes out in what, December? And then we've got, and that's going to be dealing with the multiverse as well. They've already said about that. I think Scarlet Witch is going to be dealing with stuff in Doctor Strange's movie, Multiverse of Madness. And so this just kind of makes sense as well. Like, they're really pushing the multiverse towards Phase 4 and beyond, which I'm down for.
I like multiverses more than I like time travel.
Yeah.
I was about to ask. Because multiverses are a little... I mean, I feel like it's a little more straightforward in the idea of, like, it's just multiple universes, much like Rick and Morty. Think of it that way. But it's still, you can have a million plot holes and loops and whatever. And I'm surprised that doesn't bother you.
Multiverse solves everything. Anything can happen in a different universe. Nothing to do with time travel. You can go to a universe where you exist in the exact same way, except that it's 1 second ahead. I can believe all of that. It's a multiverse. It's not time travel.
I love that. And it's like even one of those things that one of the coolest things ever was when Marvel Comics did the Ultimates. And it was not the Avengers. It was the Ultimates, but it was a different take. The Ultimate Universe or Multiverse or whatever the hell you want to call it.
That's actually the comics that got me into comic books because it was the only ones at the library. So I was a broke-ass kid in high school wanting to read more comics. So I would go to the library, especially in the summer, and I would get all the comics I could. And I actually read a lot of Daredevil at first.
Wow.
Like, because that's what they had.
Yeah, exactly. And that's like, you're kind of at the whim of like whoever's checking out what.
Right. And so I was able to read up through, I think, trade like 13 or 12 on Ultimate X-Men.
Oh, yeah. And that's
I have 8 and 9 because I couldn't find those in the library. I bought those.
Well, and that's like even it got me, the Ultimate Universe got me my favorite villain of all time. Now, you might think it might be Thanos.
That's what I thought.
MCU, absolutely. And I do love Thanos in terms of the comic books. But hands down, my favorite villain is Reed Richards' Ultimate version, which is the Maker. And it's because you get to see that like that divergence of having Reed Richards being this brilliant mind, but then one who just gets totally effed up and like basically doesn't get to go, like doesn't marry Sue Storm, doesn't do all of these different things, and really becomes an evil, 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 evil man doing it for the quote-unquote greater good, but so much that he smashes each of like the multiverses together, blows it all up. And then it turns into the Secret Wars, which was the Battle Planet thing with God Emperor Doom.
Damn. Secret Wars, wasn't that also with Skrulls?
Yes, and that was the old school one, the original one.
Oh,
yeah.
The OG, okay.
Yeah, the OG one, that's where Spider-Man got his symbiote suit, like all of these different things. Basically, it smashes into Battle Planet in the updated version a couple of years ago was the one where it was God Emperor Doom and just dealing with all of that. So it was like super cool to see all of that happen. But it was because of the Maker.
You and BJ have hyped up the Maker so much, and I know nothing about him. Every time I hear more about it, all I want is them to just put him into a movie already.
Absolutely. And it's like...
Oh, he looks a lot more badass than I was expecting, because I think you hear something like the Maker, my brain immediately went to something to look like, you know, MODOK.
Oh,
yeah. Which I forgot to mention, you know, a few episodes back when I did talk about... I think I talked about him.
Yeah, but, you did.
MODOK, we're getting it on Hulu, which is going to be voiced by Patton Oswalt. It's going to be live action, like little
claymation,
like
claymation almost. Yeah, so if like Crossing Swords
or Robot Chicken.
Yeah,
I think I posted the trailer. It is ridiculous. Yeah, like pictures.
It looks dumb and fantastic. So,
I thought the Maker was going to be something ridiculous. He actually kind of looks badass, with the exception of the helmet. He looks, almost has a Cyclops vibe.
Well, and that's the funny thing too, because in the latest issues of like X-Men and stuff, you mentioned that Charles Xavier has that same sort of mask. It's like sort of a Cerebro thing for him. It wasn't for the maker, so I don't understand why they're doing that. It makes it really kind of confusing for me, but it also does absolutely look like the Cyclops mask. Really excited to see what they're going to be doing with Spider-Man, the multiverses, and I know we got super deep into that, but I'm really stoked.
Oh crap. I think I know why he wore the mask.
Oh.
Because I'm looking at images right now.
Yeah.
He ends up growing, like, his brain kind of looks like a weird buggy alien brain.
Yeah.
So it actually just kind of covers the head. So it's not just for adornment. It's because he's got a weird head.
Yeah.
It's for fashion.
And function. Moving on from that, I talked about the greatest 90s Halloween movies. I lied. It's the greatest Halloween movie villains.
Ooh. Oh,
which, I mean, still goes into some of the greatest Halloween movies. All right, 90s? Movies. 90s.
Oh, Joe, this is our, you know, our time.
Yes. Here's the deal. The 90s, I was a teenager at least. You guys were babies during the 90s. How many horror movies did you watch?
Oh, yeah. Is it bad that I was just thinking, like, the Sanderson sisters, basically all the kid movies. The bad guy in Halloween Town.
Shredder. No, you need to know what? Like, yeah, you're thinking of all the cutesy ones. These are the terrifying ones. Yeah, you're thinking of all the fun ones, like Hocus Pocus and all of that stuff. No. But the first one that starts off on this list at number 10 is kind of a fun one. Have you guys seen Army of Darkness?
Yes.
Okay.
No.
So, you should watch it. It's fun. Because here's the deal. It's not so much scary. You've watched Ash vs. Evil Dead. Mm-hmm. So it's that vibe. It's scary. It's not really scary, but it's a little gory, a little fun. It's Bruce Campbell hamming it up with a lot of stop motion skeletons and stuff like that.
Is that the one where I think he travels back in time or something?
Yes. He travels back in time. And he's trying to get his way back as Ash from Housewares. And
I've seen the images. Like, it's like, this is my boomstick.
Yes, it's that one. Yeah, so he tries to bumble his way back to getting to present time. And depending on which version you watch, he may or may not. It's kind of like a choose your own adventure. But number 10 on this list is not Ash, but Evil Ash. Now,
not his hand.
In the movie, what happens is essentially like he ends up growing another him out of some sort of like weird little eyeball in his shoulder. Mm-hmm. It's great. They do like kind of the stop motion stuff to do it. It's a lot of fun. Evil Ash is the one who is trying to lay siege to the castle that he's at. Really great. Really fun. It's a lot of body part, like humor, like, you know, things falling off and all sorts of stuff like that. A lot of slapstick to it. Evil Ash is number 10 on this list, and it's really fun. Number 9 on this list is Dracula, and it's from Bram Stoker's Dracula. So
is that the Gary Oldman?
Yes. Francis Ford Coppola's Gary Oldman on that. And that one is cool, too, because...
Is that one scary?
He is more menacing than scary. But, I mean, more and large, it's more along the lines of the fact that he was able to... They showed him in so many different forms. Mm-hmm. So it was like, he was like old man, but it also like young and like Batman sort of... Like, not Batman, Batman,
but
like a man as a bat sort of thing. Yeah. That was kind of the cool part with all of that. Yeah, and that's what kind of made him so cool about it and really, really iconic. Maybe like the second most iconic besides Bela Lugosi's Dracula, and obviously from the 90s. Number 8 on this list, I love because they're the Graboids. I don't know if you know what the Graboids are. Okay, Vicky has no idea what the Graboids are. Now, the Graboids are from the 1990 movie Tremors. Have you guys ever seen Tremors?
Not the whole thing, no.
Yo asses need to go watch this movie. First off, it's got the greatest country music star ever, Reba McEntire. In it as a redneck hunter.
Really?
So it's basically Kevin Bacon and a slew of other characters get stuck in a town where these creatures are under the ground coming up. They're Graboids. They were probably called that later on. They weren't even named it at this point. And they have to fend off these guys who are coming to grab them and eat them and take them away. Mm. Seismic activity has set them off, whatever reason that you would have for that. I don't really remember, but I do remember it being fan-frickin-tastic. Next up on this list is the Candyman. Now, this is going to be coming out next year. Joe's just staring at me.
The Candyman can.
No.
The one, with the bees.
Yes. And this was made by Clive Barker. And like you say his name like 75 times in a mirror, and Candyman will come and do terrible things to you.
Why?
Well, I don't know. Why any horror movie sort of thing?
Does he like candy?
I don't think so, but he did have bees. please? And then, okay. Well, here's my. Do you want the really sad story about it?
You know I do.
Well, he was a son of a. The original Candyman was the legend was the son of a slave who became a wealthy businessman after the Civil War, but he was lynched by a mob of racists who cut off his hand, so he has a hook hand when he comes back, covered him in honey, and then attracted the bees that stung him to death. So That's where all of the bees come from, his little hooky hand and all that stuff. And if you say his name into a mirror 5 times, he appears using that hook and he kills whoever summoned him. So you probably don't want to do that. It's kind of along the same lines as like a Bloody Mary sort of thing on that.
And it's going to be Jordan Peele who's going to be bringing it back.
Ooh, with excited for that.
The main actor being Yahya Abdul-Mateen II, which we talked about, how he was Black Mantis and he was also in The Watchmen.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
The show.
Yep. Number 6 on this list is Chucky.
I know.
Yes.
Chucky
is fantastic. The first movie was scary. The second and moving on from all of that are just kind of ridiculous so much. I mean, they had Seed of Chucky. Jennifer Tilly was another Chucky doll type person mm-hmm. who then she ended up playing herself and then ended up going back to be playing the doll as well. It's a whole confused, like sort of like almost Deadpool-esque as it was going on, or maybe like the future Nightmare on Elm Street where it gets a little bit more ridiculous and a little more a wink and a nod towards the audience.
Dude, this is
so good,
the reason why I was terrified of Spencer's Gifts, the store at the mall when I was a kid, because of Chucky. They always had Chucky dolls hanging out.
Really?
And so I'd walk by and I'd see it. I'm like, nope, I'm not going in there. That place, I thought it was an adult store because of that.
I know the best costume to get your baby brother.
You're not getting him a Chucky costume.
Do it. The next one on this list, number 5, is Sadako Yamamura, which you may not know by the name, but you know is that crazy lady from The Ring.
Oh, okay,
And so, yeah, I mean, obviously...
the lady or the girl?
The girl.
Okay.
Yeah. The 7 days after you watch the video, she'll come through the TV and eat you or kill you or whatever the hell
I hated static on my TV ever since that movie.
I remember my friend always had her birthday parties in, like, October, because that's when her birthday was, and she'd always make us watch a horror movie, and that was, like, I actually saw that one, and I was really creeped out because I think it's based here in Washington.
Yes, yeah, the remake was.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So, fun fact about the little girl from The Ring.
Yeah?
She also did the voice of Lilo from Lilo and Stitch.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Makes her less scary. That's what they kept reminding. It's Lilo.
Number 4 on this list, Hannibal the Cannibal Lecter. Everyone here knows about Hannibal.
Yep.
He was terrifying not only because Hopkins was just, he envisioned that role, but he knew how to creep people out with that.
Anthony Hopkins is legit.
Yeah. Number 3 on this, you might not remember the name, Ann Wilkes, but see, with you kiddos, I don't even know if you guys will remember.
I do know.
What?
She's from the Stephen King book.
Yes.
Kathy Bates.
Yes, in Misery. And if you haven't seen it, it's worth it. It's a psychological thriller where James Caan is a author who ends up getting into a car accident, happens to be saved by Miss Annie, who is
a super fan, right?
Super fan. He needs to write his novel while mm-hmm. he's recovering. He explains to her that he's going to kill off her most beloved character and finish the book series. Well, that doesn't go too well with her, and so she decides to keep him captive, including a scene in which it's called hobbling. And we'll just say she takes a nice sledgehammer to somebody's ankles, well, his ankles, and
Funny enough, I mean, I've seen bits and pieces and people use it for memes and stuff like that, but the reason I really know it is because Family Guy did a spoof of Stephen King movies.
Okay.
And so it was Stewie as Annie Wilkes.
Oh, really?
And it was Brian as the writer. It was pretty awesome.
That's creepy and funny. Well, at least you learned it from Family Guy.
All right.
Number 2 on this list. Did you guys ever see The Blair Witch?
No. I was like 7.
I know, but I mean,
scary. Everyone kept talking about how it was real. It was real because of the found footage vibe.
Mm-hmm.
And, okay, I was 9 years old when it came out, but still.
Yeah, it came out in like 99 or 98. And it was one of those ones where it was kind of one of the first found footage movies, especially one of the ones that went super viral. And so they claim number 2 is The Blair Witch. And you know what? The fact that it had a bit of a viral vibe with it, like we found this stuff and this is totally true, it made you want to believe it. And the fact that you never actually saw the witch, it lends it to the old school horror where it's scary because it's left to your imagination, which is way more terrifying than anything will ever be. Like, I swear to God, it's like any of that. Like, you don't need to see the Blair Witch and to know that it's going to be under your covers or under your bed or, you know, down the hallway or in the basement. So you got to turn off the light and run up really quickly so you don't get caught.
Run.
All those things. Number 1 on this list, I have to think that you guys have seen Scream.
Yes.
Yes, actually.
All right. Ghostface Killer is number one. Not the Wu-Tang guy. Ghostface is that one. And written by Kevin Williamson and directed by Wes Craven. 96's Scream was the one movie that kind of helped you. It was one of those ones where they laid out the rules for horror movies. They were lambasting, making fun, satirizing the whole horror movie genre while succumbing to all of the pratfalls and all the pitfalls and all the issues that you would have. Like, you wanted to make sure, you know, never say that you'll be back. Because you won't be. Ooh. And you explain all these rules, and you go through all this stuff mixed in with a really smart, fun, quick, brutal, brutal movie. And even so much that, like, you didn't know what to expect because the whole thing, top build was Drew Barrymore. She's going to be in this movie. Mm-hmm. It's going to be great. First scene, gacked. Before you even see Scream on the title card, she gets wrecked. And you're just like, I don't know what to expect. And every expectation gets turned. So, yeah, I have to give 100% on that. The best villain out there for the 90s especially.
I was pretty sure I was that guy for Halloween at one point.
I was a little kid.
Yeah, I wore the mask.
Well, I mean, it's a fun mask. Ooh. Yeah, sure, why not? So those are some of those movie villains from the 90s. But I'd love to hear everyone's favorite movie villains. I mean, in the 80s, you're probably going to be fighting between, like, Mike Myers, Freddy Krueger, mm-hmm. and Jason Voorhees. So, I mean, give me some of the old random ones that you love, because I love those really bad horror movies.
And give me all the kiddie ones you like.
Yeah, all the little, all the oogie boogies that you got out there.
Oogie boogie.
Another thing that I lost was or found that was pretty cool was CBR put out the D&D 5 monsters you need to include for a Halloween session. So that's super cool.
What? Oh, okay.
Like, yeah, I know some people will do like one-shot Halloween, like if you like have your friends over, maybe... You know, maybe you can have a couple of people over, or you want to do it over like Roll20 or like Discord or Zoom or something like that, and you want to do a D&D because you can't really do a whole lot this year. And so this might be some of those things that you want to add into your list or into your monster manual for the encounters. The first one on this list is the Shadow Demon. The Shadow Demon already looks the horrifying part, but the true terror comes with this fiend's abilities. The Shadow Demon can hide as a bonus action while in dim or dark light. That's actually pretty good. Because, I mean, any sort of creature that can hide can build up that terror. And that's one of the big things that you need to do as a DM is instill that terror. You see things out of the shadow of your eye, the corner of your eye, add that stuff, throw in some spooky music, and they don't even know what the hell's going to hit them.
I technically accidentally got a shadow demon tattooed then.
What?
I'm looking at pictures, and I found this artwork. It looked very similar. It looked similar to what a lot of people are drawing shadow demons as.
Yeah?
And I was going through a rough time, so I wanted a demon tattooed.
Really?
And I apparently have one that looks very similar to this.
Wow.
That's funny.
That is great. Love that.
But he is creepy.
Oh, yeah. Straight up creepy. Another one is kind of pretty awesome is the Scarecrow. It's a construct meant for lower level campaigns. In need of a good fright, it might look a little campy when compared to the Shadow Demon, but the Scarecrow still has several qualities that make it a horrifying creature for any low level campaign. It is an animated Scarecrow in a cornfield, so you get to kind of see that as you're walking away, you know, walking down a thing. And I'm pretty sure that Curse of Strahd, the module, uses Scarecrows in some fashion, or my buddy Chris Walker just added it to his for that extra spooky factor. But yes, what if one of those things in the cornfield was just out there and you don't think anything of it, and then somebody happens to notice on their good perception roll, it's moving. And not because of the wind.
It's going to get you.
It is going to get you. Next on this list is the Banshee. The Monster Manual gives you a lot of specters and ghosts, but the Banshee is pretty badass because it usually isn't really picked that often. In combat, it acts a bit more like a hunter in the sense that it can focus on getting its targets within either visible range or within an earshot. And if it can get within 30 feet of that target, it can let out that chilling wail that has the potential to drop any hero who hears it down to 0 hit points. I mean... really, really terrifying. Plus, the worst part about it is that running from the Banshee isn't an option because it knows the location of any living creature for up to 5 miles away. Now, most higher-level characters should be able to handle a Banshee, but with low-level characters, it makes it a lot harder because a lot of the times, first off, you can't get away from it, but then also, it's a magical creature, and sometimes people don't always have magical weapons to deal with that.
Zero hit points is not a lot of hit points.
Exactly. Yeah.
You're dead.
Yeah. Well, you might be unconscious, but you're probably dead. Another one is, everyone loves skeletons, and according to Home Depot, everyone loves 12-foot skeletons,
oh my God.
So why not add giant skeletons to your party, to your campaign?
Oh, that's fantastic.
Exactly. And I mean, obviously, like, I don't know if you guys have seen it on Reddit, but some people have bought those giant 12-foot tall skeletons and then decorated them and gave them like glowing eyes and like armor and stuff like that. So if you just get some pictures of that, there you go. You're good to go.
Like a day before I started seeing the memes about all of those, I actually drove by a house that had one. and it took everything in me not to stop because there are cars behind me. But I'm hoping that after Halloween, they might still have a few available on sale.
Yeah. Like, I
want one for next year.
I hope some people are like, I don't really want this anymore and I don't know how to store it. It's like, I got a garage or, you know,
backyard.
Storage place.
Can you make them sit?
Oh, I wonder. Hopefully posable.
That would help.
The final one on this list is something that I've actually never heard of, so it'll be interesting to throw that in there. It's called the Oblex. It's a new creation for 5th edition that originated from Mind Flayer Experiences, but also from the mind of Nolan Whale, a child from the Make-A-Wish program whose wish was to spend a day working with Wizards of the Coast on D&D. That's super cool. The Oblex is a terrifying 1-2 punch of terror. It can consume the memories of its victim, and once it has enough memories, it's capable of manifesting a physical form of the person it had been stalking. So, if you wanted to do sort of like either a body horror, or if you think about the old movie The Thing, something along those lines where somebody isn't what they seem. And that would be really fun for even almost like an Among Us or anything along those sort of lines where somebody is playing as the quote unquote bad guy because they've been turned, and then trying to figure that out in the game would be really fun. And that's kind of along the lines of if you want a more of a role playing murder mystery experience where people can basically differentiate between in character and out of character, that'll be a lot more fun in those sort of terms. Like, less experienced players probably will just be able to, like, kind of metagame that sort of thing, and you won't really have the fun experience that comes with it. But, like, this is super cool, too.
There's actually, because I wanted to see what it looked like on the Googles, and Nerdist came out with an article a while back. They're wondering if this is the Stranger Things 4 villain.
Ooh.
Kind of like, you know how they kind of all kind of connect to D&D?
Yeah.
They're wondering if this is what's going to be going on.
That would be super cool, because this thing is terrifying. And just the fact that you can take over somebody's memories and then create a manifestation of it, and even creepier too. There's skulls floating around the body, which are its previous victims. So you get to see all the things it ate before.
It looks like a scully with like kind of jellyfishy, you know, mixed with the ether from that horrible Thor movie, The Red, just kind of floating around behind you. It looks like a weird gate of hell.
Yeah. That is creepy.
that nailed it.
So there's some fun, amazing things. You don't always have to do like Curse of Strahd, but that's a great Halloween thing. If you don't have an idea, you can just run with that with the campaign. But sometimes some of the most fun things are the stuff that you create for yourself, for your campaign, for your players. I'd love to hear that because I kind of want some ideas for myself. And it doesn't hurt to get all of that. So shoot us an email, send us a message, let us know all of that. But now it is time to get to
The Geek Sheet with Vicky B.
Vicky.
Mm-hmm.
Goes on in your brain. What? No, never mind. Just let's do the geek sheet.
Okay, fine. So it's still, as of now, as the time of the recording, we do not have confirmation yet that we're getting a season 3 of The Umbrella Academy.
Ah!
Which I'm still pissed. I'm like, give me the season 3. I know everything's up in the air. I know things are going on. But now, I would like just this one little thing to hold on to.
And we've talked a little bit about Hotel Oblivion because you've talked about that. And that was the third graphic novel.
Mm-hmm.
I'm currently reading it. I'm very confused. But I'm only 3 chapters in. Out of the 7.
Any book of, like, once you read them, like, it'll make sense. That's what I say to people. I'm like, don't be discouraged. If you have to read it a second time all the way through,
and that's,
just do it.
And that's what I'm expecting to do. I'm going to read it. Marvel at Gabriel Ba's
artwork,
because it's so good.
It's so unique.
Yeah. And then from there, probably have to read it again, and then you'll get it back.
Yeah. And I know we keep talking about it, but I'm still obsessed, and I can't wait. Like, there needs to be a season 3, otherwise I'm going to be really upset.
Right.
That being said, Screen Rant came out with an article talking about new powers each of the siblings could actually possibly have for season 3.
Now, are they talking like upgrade powers, like level up, or just kind of like brand new ones? Because in the comics, the powers are a lot more involved. And we talked about
the fact that
Diego didn't have manipulating projectiles. He can breathe a really long
time. I think he had
both. Did he?
I think he had both.
Okay.
Like, he can hold his breath indefinitely underwater.
And it's like one of the interesting things with Seance, who is
Klaus.
Klaus, thank you. Is that he can communicate with the dead and do all of that stuff, but also in the comic books he could levitate things.
Mm-hmm.
And they kind of made a nod to that when they had Ben levitating
him in the
show. So I wonder if they're going to kind of go around those lines or something like that.
Well, what the article's saying, at least for Luther, because, you know, we saw that his physical strength did grow and he was, you know, working out and stuff.
Space boy!
And actually, funny enough, in the comics, in the second series, he ends up gaining a lot of weight.
Fat Thor.
Basically. And that's the reason they didn't do it.
Yeah, they had...
It was because of Fat Thor.
They couldn't do that because, seriously, like, and it's really funny because at the beginning of the third one, he looks like Fat Thor.
Yeah.
Like, he's huge and fat and just a huge, massive beard. Like, he let himself utterly go.
Yeah, because he was just depressed.
And I love just the way they kind of handled that in the book. It's kind of funny.
Yeah, the book very much just, like, it's nothing to do with our reality at all.
No.
It's not the same. So with the show, they definitely have a little bit more set. They're more grounded in, like, what would be considered our reality.
Yeah.
A little bit more believable, if you will. But, you know, we have seen that he can take a bunch of physical abuse from being crushed to a chandelier,
mm-hmm.
you know, taking the brunt of a missile explosion, but all that strength does have a limit. So as season three would continue, or hopefully, that his other abilities may come into play, such as his aptitude for piloting, which if you actually take a peek, like when he's in his room, you see all these planes and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Another thing would be that they would love to explore more of his monkey-like abilities, like opposable toes, which are mostly downplayed or ignored in the TV adaptation. I don't think we've seen his feet.
No. Like, I probably would have remembered that. And it's even like he's not as... pronounced with his monkey appendages, mm-hmm. so to speak, because in the comics, it's like big, giant, hairy.
Like his arms are really long.
Yeah, gigantic and just massive. And while he is big in the show, he's just kind of like a hairy dude.
Yeah, he looks like a big, bulky dude. I would definitely love to see, you know, maybe more of that, you know, wild side, if you will, kind of come out.
Mm-hmm.
For Diego number two, we were talking about how he is the Kraken.
Yep.
But apparently, you know, his quasi-telekinetic power is extended in, like, season two. We saw, you know, when he was able to stop the bullets midair, mm-hmm. and kind of change their direction. But he seems to struggle to use his power depending on the velocity and numbers of the objects in air. But he's also been seen to control it with ease. So... what, you know, will this power continue to evolve in season three, or will we possibly just get more water-based abilities through him?
Huh.
So, because, I mean, you can definitely, I mean, in a way, if you could, I'm comic book explaining this. The reason he can breathe underwater for so long, this is my guess, is because he can direct the water, like, and have the air direct into him, you know, change the path of the water and air, so he's breathing in air underwater.
Has he done anything with water in the series yet?
TV show, no. Okay. No, they've really just been focusing on the projectile thing.
Yeah, I wanted to make sure I didn't miss anything, because I don't remember him doing anything, but then again, so much happens in that show.
Oh, yeah, right.
I'm glad, this is one of the things I had talked about plenty of times, and this is with Allison, number three, that her powers aren't just, you know, do as I say, it's let me change reality, as in,
yeah.
Hey, I heard I blew your mind, and it legit blew her mind. Like,
pop.
She, in the comic, it is, she... The Statue of Lincoln comes to life.
Yeah, yeah. And like, again, like,
this is, you know,
can't base this on any reality. This is Gerard Way's weird multi-Earth sort of thing. Like, it's just right. Another dimension that has Earth in it.
Yeah, like,
it's super weird.
Apparently, like, the Eiffel Tower was a spaceship.
Yep.
But, you know, by aliens and stuff. And I think the Lincoln Tower monument was the same thing. And so he was fighting. They're trying to fight him, and they can't. So she says... something along those lines,
yeah.
Like, I heard you got shot in the back of your head, and then this monument of John Wilkes Booth comes up and shoots, you know, Lincoln's yeah. monument, and so that forever, like, it was hinted that it changed history, that actually now happened. That's what I understood from it.
And there's a lot of things like that, like, especially, like, yeah, she had, like, way more reality-bending stuff.
Where it doesn't just affect present time, where it could affect all of, you know, mm-hmm. the time continuum.
Mm-hmm.
But we did see her kind of going a little dark. Like, you know, with the whole coffee pouring scene, it's like, are we going to have to see
yeah.
some sort of, you know, bad side to her? Why she, like, aside from the, you know, emotional and, you know, your relationship struggles that she did have, you know, when she started controlling her daughter and stuff and her ex-husband saw,
mm-hmm.
like, yeah, that's a bad thing, but maybe she's afraid for other reasons too.
Be interesting on that.
Klaus, number four, we did kind of talk about that. Are we going to see more of his, you know, levitating? He has the ability to read minds, use astral projection to communicate with his siblings, possess and control the actions of others. So he's actually probably one of, like, the most, like, he's a very strong character, but
yeah.
because of the drugs and personality.
Drugs.
He's not.
He already has a cult following.
I mean, literally.
Literally.
Oh, God.
But wow, yeah.
I mean, that was one of the things, too, that kind of did a nod to he doesn't wear shoes because that's how he can't use his powers if he's wearing shoes.
Now,
in the comics.
Because I'm getting my information kind of mixed up or not, did they explain in the show number 5 that he has the DNA from all of the killers, or was I reading that? Okay, so that was from the comic book.
So the reason why number 5 was such a powerful, you know, assassin, if you will, in the comics is because when he went to the commission, they kind of spliced his DNA with every murderer ever. So, you know, you got your...
He's literally the perfect assassin because he's all of the assassins.
Was it John Wilkes Booth, and then what's a... Lee Harvey Oswald,
yep. John Wilkes Booth,
like those guys,
et cetera, et cetera. Like they go through a hit, kind of a whole rundown of like other famous ones, but I don't know them because I forgot.
But that's also like in the comic, he feels more colder, if you will, even towards his siblings. Because mm-hmm. in the comic, spoiler, if you guys haven't read the comic, he's the one that actually shoots Vanya. Like at the very end, it was Allison who shoots a gun by her ear, so it disrupts her from, you know, killing her siblings. But in the comic, he actually shoots her in the back of the head,
mm-hmm.
which, you know, and she survived it. But the thing he says to her, which I thought was ice cold, he's like, I never really liked you anyways.
Rude.
And I was like, ouch. And in the series, they definitely make him more of a family type man. Like,
yeah.
He loves his family. He wants to get back to him. He wants to save them. So I'm kind of glad they changed that. So I don't think they're going to go with the whole, let's splice the DNA, unless they didn't tell him.
Mm-hmm.
Because I feel like he would have probably mentioned that by now. But I feel like he probably is going to have to hone in on his space jumping powers, jumping through time, because keeps messing everything up.
Right? Yeah, I know. And I'm really interested on where they want to go with it. Obviously, that we saw at the end of it, we saw the Sparrow Academy.
Mm-hmm.
Papa Hargreaves is still kicking around now.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to see that interaction and those issues with that, because it'll be fun, but they need to confirm that we have a season 3.
Yes,
come on, Netflix. Right. Come on. You know it's super popular and you want to.
And, I mean, we want to see more Ben. We want to see no more Vanya.
Yes.
We got to see what's going to happen with these guys, so make it so... Until next time, guys, stay nerdy.